Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, and this particular episode is Cues of the Force. Cues is short for questions. Force is the word force. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsug. No one's forcing you to listen to our questions, but we hope you do in our answers to the questions.
Sorry. Yeah. I mean, if you want to listen to just the questions and then mute and see if we're done answering, that's a way to approach it. Please feel free to listen to the podcast any way you like. We are going to have some thoughtful questions today, as always, and we're going to have some really fun questions, a great balance. Thank you, everyone who sent in questions. But we always want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week, we are recommending Kenobi by John Jackson Miller. It is hard to say the title of that book without doing a General Grievous impression. Imagine him finding it in the bookstore. Kenobi. Anyway, I really enjoyed this. It is a Legends Kenobi story, but it has a lot of great connections to the television show we all just experienced. So if you'd be interested in listening to that book, you can download your free audiobook today by going to audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Again, audibletrial.com/forcecenter, free audiobook. Ken, do you have any audiobook thoughts you want to share today?
One day I'm going to revisit a great Star Wars audiobook and not get lost in a daydream and forget where I am four chapters in. Because everyone else who loves the audiobooks, they just praise them to high heavens. The production quality is so great. And I want to be in that cool crowd.
Me too. Sometimes I have the thing that the audio fires my imagination. So like there'll be a sound effect or a line or a delivery that makes me go like, oh, wow. Yeah, I would like to, you know, include some element of this in a story I'm working on. And then suddenly I'll realize, oh, I've stopped listening.
See? Yeah. Good to know you're not alone. Yeah.
You are not alone. All right. We're going to get into our questions. We have two from Twitter, as always, as well as two from patrons on Patreon. First, we're going into a deep Kenobi question. This comes to us from Collecting Star Wars. Collecting Star Wars says, other than droids, Kenobi traditionally uses alternatives to fighting and killing. However, the Kenobi series seems to have abandoned tradition. In episode 2, he shoots an unarmed man in the back. Episode 4, he mows down troopers like grass. Why this drastic change in his philosophy? I think, Ken, that this is an important question, an interesting question. It is a question that is stated with passion. I also want to be able to be clear that this question came to us, as you might be able to tell, before the finale. And I think the finale obviously does have some perspectives on violence and Kenobi choosing not to continue engaging in violence with Vader has, I think, stirred some questions that are almost the opposite of Collecting Star Wars questions of why didn't he continue violence? So I thought it would be great to address this wonderful question by just kind of wrestling with the big picture idea of Kenobi's relationship to using violence. When he chooses to use it, when he chooses not to, and how much consistency is there in the character's evolution over the years?
Yeah, so this is great stuff. I feel like this is a press conference, and I'm just the person that's setting the tone, and then I'm going to hand over all questions to Joseph Scrimshaw, Vice President of Kenobi. I agree. This is a great question in the sense of like it's there. Like there's some things he does in the show that make you go, hmm. And I think that's sometimes the point. And that's where I approach a lot of things when it comes to analyzing Star Wars, where you know, I love the line, you know, characters aren't what characters say aren't facts. You know, that's one that goes along around Twitter a lot. I'm certainly not the only person to say that or believe that. And I think sometimes what the shows, the movies and shows are showing you are meant to make you go, that seems slightly different. So why is he doing that? And so nothing here I'm saying I hold as fact. I'll start here, Joseph, before I do hand it over to you at the podium here. To me, you got to look at the purpose of the action, the end game. I don't think you can overlook that. I think when Freck sells them out, that's a weird story. And Kenobi has been trying to run from the fight more than avoid it, if that makes sense. That's totally my interpretation of just a lot of where Kenobi's headspace is, what his headspace is. This isn't like I'm working through it to not fight it. It's like I'm nervous. I don't trust anyone. I'm running from a lot of things. I'm just trying to put my head down. Let's get through it. But still keeping in mind that he's there to protect Leia, trying to get back and try to get her home. And so it's not he's trying to get through conflicts in other ways. He's just trying to avoid the conflict. So my interpretation, I'll say that a few times here. He comes off more lost than on a mission when he and Leia first land to me in that third chapter specifically. Second one's a little different, but when he's on Dayu, but still the same vibe. But that third one, there's a little bit of like, what the hell are we doing here? And though she's choosing hope, Freck does sell them out and everything. So all that to say, he's pushed into action. He has to take to keep Leia alive is a big talking point for me. But I will pass that quickly. Then I think that's one you're probably going to talk about more, Joseph, there. But I feel like reporters, the cameras are going. Also, not for nothing. I interpret him as being someone who has lost his sense of self. And who's to say, and this is one of those total headcanon questions to Collecting Star Wars and anyone going, yeah, this is a question I want to answer. This is a headcanon thing. Who's to say he won't address some of the specific actions later with Qui-Gon or himself? I don't need a long one-on-one conversation with Qui-Gon, but maybe he's going to look back and think, how did I get to where I was? And Why did I make those decisions? And by the way, I think I'm just talking about some of his actions, you know, saying shooting an unarmed person or mowing down troopers, or even some of his actions in chapter three, or blaster based aggression. Right. Like maybe he looks back and analyzes it a little bit more. But I also don't think characters have to stick to these templates that we come to know so well. And on screen, yes, he does do things with, like I said, a bit more aggression, energy, violence, but he's not wielding his lightsaber at that point, right? He's holding that back. And one hand he can't, because it might get him in even more trouble. And two, he's being kind of forced to fight in a dirty game at this point that Freck and this whole situation's put him in. So I focus on that Freck episode even more than episode two or four for me with this question. But that's my overall view on it, and I'll take some follow-ups here at the podium.
I think you make a lot of really great points, and you're reminding me that I have a screenshot I took with my phone of the screen that I really like, of the moment where Kenobi knocks Freck out by hitting him in the back of the head with the butt of the blaster, and the subtitles say, "Hey!"
Yeah.
As Freck is getting bonked on the noggin. I think I really like the point that you make, that we're tracking his actions and trying to discern philosophy and has it changed from different points in his life. And I think you make a really valuable point that part of where he's at in the early part of the show is flailing, right? He's agreed to do this, but he said his first instinct was, "I'm not that man anymore. I don't know how to do this. I don't want to do this. And I've got like the only thing on my to-do list pinned on my vision board is don't lose Leia. Don't lose another person in my care. Don't fail another Skywalker." And for the first half of this, he's flubbing his dub just trying to figure out how to do that. And I think that mindset is definitely a great thing to point out. I love that. I also think that, you know, collecting Star Wars, a great question here starts with other than droids, which puts me in mind of the prequels, but it also puts me in mind of the Clone Wars. And I really understand coming at this, like, is Kenobi being more violent in this show than he is in the Clone Wars? And in the Clone Wars animated series in particular, you know, we see plenty of violence, but, you know, I think there is some mindfulness of the violence. We certainly see Anakin just straight up kill some people, but in the Clone Wars animated series, we see Obi-Wan fight lots of droids. He does kill a few animals, you know, in defense. He fights with Grievous and Ventress, and there's a, you know, an implication that he would possibly strike them down, but he doesn't kill them. So I get where that's coming from. But I wanted to kind of take a step back and kind of look at Kenobi's history, and I'll try to keep the press conference brief to the best of my ability. I think for myself, I don't think his philosophy changed in the Kenobi show drastically. I think it is a reflection of the fact that Jedi in general, and Kenobi in particular, always wrestle with the place of violence. There's that great quote in one of the High Republic books. I believe it's Jarl Poof who says it, that, you know, the Jedi stand for peace and justice, and sometimes peace and justice, you know, pull at you in different ways, which I think is a great, elegant way to say it. And I think that Jedi in general, Kenobi in particular, because he's crafty and often looking for a better solution, a more elegant solution, that in general, they avoid violence whenever possible. And when violence has to happen, it's got to be in defense. And it seems even more justifiable if it's immediate defense. There's a person right behind me and I'm stopping someone from cutting them down. And unfortunately, I have to cut that person down. I think there is also a part of Jedi philosophy, which seems to be actively at work in the prequel era, of the only thing that the Jedi can't tolerate is intolerance, right? That they know the Sith must be stopped because the Sith will, they will attack, they will kill, they will spread the dark side, they will cause others great suffering, so the Jedi have to stop that. So there's always that wrestling with, when is it defense and when am I slipping into aggression? When is my violence going to cause more violence? And I think they're always wrestling with that. So with that in mind, I just kind of walked through a little bit of Obi-Wan's choices. I think in the actual prequels, we see him follow the general doctrine of avoid violence, but the Sith must be stopped, right? He cuts down Maul in The Phantom Menace. He cuts him in half. When he's been attacked in the arena, he kills that Ackley and makes sure it's dead. Right.
Yeah.
In Revenge of the Sith, I'm sure he would have preferred to arrest Grievous, but Grievous has to be stopped for the war to stop is his mission. And he blows apart his organ sac. Right. Once the clones have turned on the Jedi and he needs to get back into the temple to reprogram that message so Jedi are not led to the slaughter, he and Yoda take out clones in order to get back to that temple. We now know in canon that he believes in Revenge of the Sith that he killed Anakin. So we do in the prequels see him take life. I think it's almost always with the doctrine of defense. And I think in the beginning of the Kenobi show, like this question is pointed out, and like you pointed out, he's in this. I don't think he's not sitting down and meditating and deciding, where do I want to stand on the doctrine? Do I want to just use violence as defense, or do I want to really be clever and try to find ways around it? I think he's just like, got to keep Leia alive any way possible. Mm-hmm. And the guy grabbing Leia is a bounty hunter. He's saying, get the girl. She'll tell him where he is. He's desperately defending Leia. It doesn't look particularly honorable for honorable Jedi Knight Kenobi, but it is in defense. The stormtroopers are a threat to Leia and himself. And there is a total lack of elegance that feels maybe not Kenobi-like, but I think for it is exactly what you're saying of he's finding himself again. He's finding his skills again, and he's just desperate to keep her alive. It is absolutely defense. It's inelegant, violent defense, but it's defense. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pause there in case you have any thoughts, and then I'll go on.
sir, one question. No, I want to back up your claim. I guess we're in court now. Back up your idea of part of what stands out to me is the violence. I use the aggression energy violence. There's something a little bit different about it than, say, Chalmers Cantina, where he just quickly whips out the lightsaber and I gave you every chance. I offered to buy you a drink. Now your hand's on the floor. And ain't that cool? I'm a samurai on the go here. It's kind of violent. It's very violent. It's very aggressive. Mm-hmm. And I think it kind of needs to be, but you're right. He wasn't, at that point, wasn't a Jedi in my mind. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying he wasn't, but like he was a different, that's what I mean by the headspace thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, so, I think the headspace thing is absolutely great. And I think by the time of A New Hope, he is centered and he's like, hey, I tried. I'm protecting Luke. This is an immediate protection. They have blasters and they want to kill Luke basically because they're drunk and mean. No. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And in modern, you know, I grew up with the cut off a walrus man's arm and killed Pig Man. Now in modern canon, he wounded both Ponda Baba and Dr. Evazin, but they both lived. That's a whole other thing. So kind of coming back to the show, I think the first half, it can be shocking because it is kind of inelegant. It's Kenobi using a blaster. I think it is defense. And then I think as the show goes on, he's haunted by his own violence that he killed Anakin. And throughout the show, he's confronted with the cycle of violence, right? He mm-hmm. personally experiences Vader's rage of Vader wanting to drag him through the flames. That is such a cycle of violence thing. I want to do exactly to you what you did to me. That violence leading to pain. He comes back to his Jedi self a little bit, he uses his insights and is more crafty and has a conversation with Reva and really understands that Reva's trauma is causing her to almost become Vader again. And I think he's waking up, right? Because he is becoming more aware of that Jedi philosophy, right? Mm-hmm. I think it's so stylistically done. It doesn't really matter to me whether both Vader and Kenobi are literally remembering that one specific sparring match. But I think they're both thinking of what has our relationship always been? Vader knows he's coming for Kenobi. Kenobi knows Vader is coming for him. And they're both thinking through their strategy. But within that, I think Kenobi is connecting back to earlier days of being a Jedi, even before the Clone Wars, before he said, okay, I need it's defense. I'll go out and be a general. I'll go out and be a warrior. And he's thinking back to, well, I used to truly believe that a Jedi's goal was to protect life, not take it. And I think you can have fun thinking about, like, does he think about how far he's come from that?
Yeah.
And then he goes into this final battle where he is making this tactical decision to draw Vader away. He says pretty explicitly to Qui-Gon and Roken that he is willing to kill or be killed in the fight with Vader.
Right.
And then, you know, he takes it to Vader. He cuts that helmet. He sees Anakin and it stops him in his tracks. Right. And then we get all the great stuff between them of him apologizing and Anakin saying, "You didn't do this. I made this choice." And he recognizes that Anakin's gone and it's Vader there. Kenobi recognizes, yep, I made some mistakes. He made this choice. And I think it makes him, you know, able to forgive himself a little bit. But then within all of that, to this violence point, Vader wants to keep fighting, you know. Mm-hmm. He raises the blade again and says, "I'm going to destroy you." And in that moment, you know, Obi-Wan does make a different violence choice.
Yeah.
There's not somebody who's immediately being defended. If Leia was behind him, I think Obi-Wan might have kept fighting, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The defense is now onto the larger and the more theoretical. And I think in that moment, he is flashing back to, "I want to preserve life, not take it." That includes... In this moment, I don't want to cut down this person that I trained.
Yeah.
I don't want him to cut me down. I want to break the cycle of violence in this moment, and he chooses to disengage. Mm-hmm. And for me, I think this goes to a little bit of what you were saying about it matters what's in your heart. I think that for me, the way I interpret the Jedi philosophy is your actions matter, but also how you take them matters of what is in your heart. You know, sometimes defense is necessary, and sadly, sometimes violence is necessary. But are you doing it with great regret, with the conviction that you're immediately saving another life? Or is there even the tiniest possibility that you are selfishly lashing out in your own anger or to resolve your own problem? Mm. And I think for Kenobi in that moment with Vader where he walks away, he's like, if I choose to keep fighting, you know, this boy that I was supposed to train, I'm just going to feed his anger. And I'm not doing that. I'm not in a place to do that. Compare that to what happens in the fight with Maul in Rebels. He cuts down Maul with regret to directly defend Luke. He doesn't ignite that blade until Maul realizes you're protecting someone. Luke is in immediate danger if Kenobi doesn't cut down Maul. And there is clearly not an ounce of malice in Kenobi's heart. He's entirely centered. It's just, you're going to hurt this boy. I can't let you. Let me hold you while you die. Let me try to give you whatever comfort I can. There's no malice, you know? But he's returning to this philosophy of, if I'm centered, if I know why I'm making the choice, if it's not about me, if it's not selfish, it's so sad. But sometimes you have to stop people. And that continues, right? He recognizes that the Death Star is the same kind of imminent threat. It's going to destroy Yavin and all of the rebels there. He encourages Luke to destroy it. He encourages Luke to face Vader, knowing that death might be a part of that. Even at the end of the Kenobi show, he gives that holster to Leia. He's not giving her a blaster yet, but giving her the holster is saying it's a sad reality that sometimes violence is necessary. It is to be avoided at all costs, but sometimes in defense, it's necessary. So I think for me, if you look through his whole arc, there's lots to be talked about. There's a lot to be debated morally within Star Wars, morally within the real world. But I think there's a real consistency of philosophy of it is to be avoided. And if there's any way around it, it has to be taken. But if it's in immediate defense, then it's a sad responsibility. There's my press conference, Ken.
No. No, it's great. And there's something too about how the philosophy at all is great. And a lot of it, again, a lot of us is what you and I have fun doing is looking at a scene, asking the big questions, asking the why, and just coming up with what we think of it and trying to connect it to other parts of the Star Wars story. And that's what I think we're doing here as well. It makes me also think of some of the stuff of Luke in Battlefront 2, of him and Delmico and their conversation, the relationship to Jedi's relationship to violence. And you've just gone through a level where you've slaughtered a lot of stormtroopers. at Plants, and just this idea of, they didn't ask for my help. They didn't give me a choice. And I gave them one. So, and that's part of it too. And I just, that comes to mind, just thinking of the actual, like we've been talking, the energy and violence, the aggression with the stormtroopers, with the you know, fisticuffs and all those kind of things, which, other than, Clone Wars animated series, it seems to Kenobi has a little bit of vibe to Kenobi, but it definitely reads a little different to me, which is why I think this is a fun question to tackle.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that Star Wars always has this tension that we talk about that I think it advocates for pacifism and to avoid violence, but it also advocates that you have to fight back when there is no other choice. And it creates all these interesting moral quandaries and all of the back and forth with Kenobi's choices with Vader, where it's all going is Luke saving his father by throwing down his blade, by showing mercy, and by Anakin making a better choice. So this whole story and all of its convolutions leads to that, you know, critical moment, which is important to me. So I think it's complex. I think it is always open for more discussion, but I think that's the point, is that anytime you use violence, it's a hard choice. And when Kenobi does choose violence, it matters. When he avoids it, it matters. What's going on with Kenobi personally in that moment at that time matters. And I think that it's some of the rich things that are important emotionally and thematically to discuss about Star Wars.
Love it. Yeah.
All right. Any other thoughts, or shall we move on?
Press conference is closed for today.
Thank you for that question, which led us into lots of complex and fun thoughts. Moving on to a question from James Pasqualucci. James says, hello there, Ken, Joseph, and Jennifer. We all know the great Star Wars phrase, may the Force be with you. As we have learned more and more names for the Force in modern canon, I have loved the idea of different phrases for those names. Out of all the great names, I really love the name Luminous Mist in the Legends of Luke Skywalker book. Based on that, I coined the phrase, may the luminous mist dampen you with waters of rejuvenation. I would be interested to hear what kinds of phrases you'd create with different names of the Force. Thanks to you all. And, well, may the Force be with you. Well, may the luminous mist dampen you with waters of rejuvenation, James. Thank you for the question. Ken, what are your favorite other names for the Force?
There's a lot of oh my gosh, I just forgot. What's from the same book? Is it The Wind? No.
It is The Mist.
No, there's some.
The Mist is the one that I know. The Mist is the one that I remember. I'd have to look it up to see what the other ones were, because The Mist is so good that that's the one I remember.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, there's a lot of fun ones. And I love other cultures' relationships with the Force. And there's some even in some of the Thrawn books and everything. It's fascinating because as a kid, you just kind of grew up thinking, there's only one view on it, right? It's the Force. That's what it is. So in answer to this, what phrases?
Yeah. What would you make up?
The mist one, the luminous mist dampening with waters of rejuvenation sounds like a wonderful soap commercial as well. But I think you have to do the Jan Dodonna test. You have to imagine him sitting in front of a bunch of pilots and how can you say it? You know, and I can't, may the luminous mist dampen. You're losing people's attention with it, which, by the way, James, I'm not saying that's a bad phrase you've come up with. Needs to be punchy. That's why May the Force Be With You works so well in story and out. So I have three options here based off James. I have May the Mist Envelop You. going there. Then I have May the Light Warm Your Soul.
Aw.
Yeah. And then the final one is May the Midichlorians Run Through You.
Now, do you mean that one as a joke? Because it kind of sounds like you had some bad midichlorians.
Both.
I like that. What was the second one about the light?
May the light warm your soul.
May the light warm your soul, man. Yeah. We need those moments. That's what I felt at the end of the Kenobi show. Like the light was warming my soul. For ones that exist, I like that. The chess call force sensitive people Skywalkers. At first, I wasn't sure about it, but it's, you know, a translation, and I thought that was really interesting. And since they are used literally to navigate through difficult parts of space by using the Force, I thought that was really cool. And then I like that in the just have different terms for different abilities, like second sight being telepathy and third sight being precognition. Mm-hmm. I just really like that because it's this great examination of how would a rigid society talk about the Force? And like, we've broken it down into powers.
That's so true.
Into which ones are useful, you know?
So true.
Normally I have a list. I liked your list, but I only have one. Mm. And this is the one that just jumped to my mind. And it's from my real life experience. I would call the Force the room. Mm. And, if I could whisper to Luke Skywalker, I'd say, read the room, Luke. I mean, it partially is a joke and partially is a truth. I feel like that phrase read the room it's about intuition, right? It's about being aware of other people's energy. It's about being aware of your own. It's about being aware of how everything is connected. Because a lot of times when the jokey read the room phrase comes up, it's because somebody's all up in their own head about their own thing and then say something that is clearly not the thing to be said. And you'd know that if you reached out with your feelings, mm-hmm. paid attention to what's going on with other people, and maybe even your own energy and the situation. And the more like kind of personal, powerful thing for me of like reading a room for doing a comedy show feels like the closest that I can get to using the Force, right? Because it's you can break down some of it. Some of it's laughs. Some of it's rustling. You know, some of it's is there a noise that isn't a laugh? But it all piles up into just this instinctual feeling, you know, and like doing the same show many nights in a row and like just trying to be present. And it's like, I don't just plow forward and say my jokes. Mm. I adjust to the audience and mm-hmm. having those nights where like, oh, I'm really good at reading the room. And I really know that this is the pause or this is the emphasis to land this joke. And then suddenly one night being like, I need to pause longer because I can just mm-hmm. read the room and I can sense it will land twice as hard if I wait a second more. That's the closest I've ever felt to using the Force. And in some of those times where Star Wars, you know, started to feel deep to me is in those artistic moments. So that's my answer is reading the room.
Mm. I love it. It also makes me think that many nights of my stand-up career, I have been Kenobi in episodes 1 through 4, where I'm just kind of like, I understand that you need to read the room. I'm just going to plow through with my head down and try to figure it out. And it never works. But when you pay attention and read that room, connect to the energy that's there, you do absolutely have a better set. So there you go. Stand-up advice from Force Center.
Yep. The energy is here between the stage and the bar.
And if you're ever at a historic rock and roll venue and they put the crowd 60 feet away from the stage, you will have trouble reading the room.
It's energy. It matters. It really matters. There's the living force, the cosmic force, and the comedy room setup force. Thank you, James, for that great question. We are going to take a quick break and we'll be back with our questions from our patrons on Patreon.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And we are back for more Cues of the Force. We're going to go to a question from patron Robert Meadows. Robert says, do you think Owen and Beru knew about Leia? Was that something Obi-Wan would have told them when he dropped off Luke? Did Brea know about Luke? Obviously, Bail knew about both of them, but who else other than Bail, Obi-Wan, and Yoda? Ken, this is fun. Who knows what, when? What do you think? Do you think, we'll take the first one. Do you think Obi-Wan told Owen and Beru about Leia when he dropped off Luke?
No, I don't. My headcanon is that they do not know, perhaps all the way until the tragic ending. Though it's possible that after, I don't know, some of the stuff we've seen, maybe there's more, they're open to it, or Kenobi's open to share. And I say this as, I mean, I kind of would think, again, this is total headcanon. I'm trying to rack my brain to see if there's anything in the comics or any canon that would dictate otherwise. So if there is, I apologize. But I don't think, I think Owen and Beru don't know, and they're left a little bit in the dark, and maybe that's not fair. And maybe that's not fair to them. And if they were to find out at some later date, maybe hey, Owen would be even a little more grumpy. That ages them 2 more years overnight. but I don't know. Maybe there's some good reason for it. I think Bail and Breha are in a very different position. It's more of an open display that this is our adoptive daughter, which is not to lessen Leia's danger at all. Clearly, it's not the case, but it's just a little different situation on Tatooine. So, yeah. And as far as, and I'm just trying to think the actual, like, just trying to replay the scenes in my mind. I didn't have time. I was going to watch a little more of the Owen Beru scenes today, and I didn't have a chance. But, like, he more than anyone, Owen wants Kenobi to go away. So if old Ben takes a vacation off world, they ain't asking what he's doing, right? Mm-mm. They're not saying, where are you going? I got to help his sister. His what? Like, there's none of that going on. So they're happy. He's gone. That's all Owen cares about. Beru might be a different story, of course. Yeah.
No, I think Owen's energy is very much, and don't let the door hit your Eopi on the way out. Like, he's, I don't care why. I just don't want you here, you know?
Yeah.
I think, like you said, maybe there's something in a comic book that I don't remember, or, you know, going forward from Kenobi, the Kenobi show opened up so many bits of imagination. At some point, does Kenobi just have, you know, go to a cafe in Anchorhead and have a calf with just Beru?
Yep.
Have a better chat with Beru? Maybe. Yeah. That would be fascinating. But I think for the Kenobi television show, I do not get the vibe that Obi-Wan told them when he dropped Luke off, right?
Yeah.
I think that he was so aware that they were meant to be hidden. They've been split up so they could be hidden. Why would Obi-Wan take that risk to tell Owen and Beru something that they just, that he really didn't think they should tell Luke, you know? And I think that after the experience that he has with Leia in the Kenobi show, I think he wants to protect her even more, you know?
That
hug goodbye and saying, you know, we have to be very careful. It could endanger either of us if people knew that we had, you know, met. I think the fact that you know, he becomes a force spirit who can whisper in Luke's ear, and he doesn't even tell Luke.
Yeah.
Until Luke's just going to kind of intuit it anyway, right? At some point here very, very soon. And that Luke's, you know, old enough and mature enough and has found as much success as a Jedi that he's ready for the truth. I think the fact that Obi-Wan keeps it secret for that long really makes me feel like he would not land on Tatooine right after the tragedy and go, don't tell him, but he's got a sister.
Yeah, I think there's some, just thinking of some logistics behind it too, of, you know, number one, Kenobi, Yoda, they have a much different relationship with Bail than Owen, right? Owen's this guy on the far side of the world with his then girlfriend or wife, maybe by the point of Revenge of the Sith. But just Brea and Bail just being in the center of the galaxy, they're more plugged in, and like they're going to hear, you know, hey, we found some kid on Tatooine, like that might mean something to them. Versus the other way around. It's just some of the nuts and bolts looking at it as well. Which again, all this to say, I always like to find a little bit of that justice for Owen and Brew now, for sure. 100% Brew. A Brew crew over here. But, you know, I think it works. I think they might not understand it. And if they found out, they'd be very upset, especially Owen Lars. But I think it was wise not to tell him.
Yeah. I think for me, Bail and Brea is a different situation. Bail strikes me as a husband who communicates.
He does.
Bail obviously knows the truth. And I think, yeah, they are preparing Leia to lead Alderaan, but also to go out into the galaxy and be a representative of Alderaan. Mm-hmm. And they are preparing Leia to be out in the world. I don't think that they are preparing to, they're clearly making choices. There's some great stuff in the Leia book Bloodline about when and how Bail is maybe going to communicate some stuff. All that is going on. But I think when Bail shows up with Leia, I think he tells Brea everything he knows. That's just the vibe I get from their relationship.
Again, you know, Owen, you got some things to work on, but I love you.
Exactly. As a husband, I know there's a lot of love between Owen and Brew, but I try to be a little bit more Bail than Owen.
Yes.
Do you think, to answer Robert's final part of this question, do you think there are other people besides Bail, Obi-Wan, Yoda, and in our opinion, Brea, who know about both twins?
There is one, the most important thing in the galaxy with the answers, R2-D Toa. R2
knows.
Oh,
yeah. And R2 knows.
He's got all the secrets.
Yeah, and R2 keeps his metaphorical lips sealed tight. Mm-hmm. Very, very tight.
Mm-hmm.
All right, any other questions on that one before we move on?
No, it's great. It's a lot of fun. I love stuff like that. And again, you're right. The Kenobi series, I keep saying it's like re-energized my love for New Hope, which was always pretty strong, but it's so much fun to just have these kind of headcanon kind of thoughts and questions.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's really fun now. This is something I never would have thought about without the Kenobi show and then Robert's great question. But now we are Brew Crew, and now I really like the, like, can I possibly talk to you without Owen?
Yeah.
Get on the same page. Mm-hmm. I would love that. All right, moving on to our final question. Full disclosure, we did get this question on our live Q&A, which you can check out on YouTube if you'd like, but that was kind of off the cuff. Wanted to be sure to give it its full due. And to be perfectly honest, I'd already picked this question out and wanted to keep it in here. We'll get to all of the great questions that everybody is sending in very soon. But our final question today comes from Joshua Bernard. Joshua says, hi, Ken, Joseph, and Jen. I have a question about the alien that was in the last episode of Obi-Wan. The alien in the parts store looks and kind of sounds like Wilford Brimley. Do you guys think that was a reference to him, or was it just a funny quintessence? Mm-hmm. Excellent vocabulary word, quintessence, as well. So thank you, Joshua. Ken, what are your thoughts after more examination? Do you feel that alien and Wilford Brimley are one and the same?
I'm going to hold to what I said on the show. I think he has more to do with, like, Martin Van Buren. Like, he's more designed like an old president, maybe a Millard Fillmore in there as well. Definitely not a Franklin Pierce, but he's just got some chops. He's got a little bit, it's just more of that vibe. I want it to be Brimley. We're so excited with this question. I even pulled the Ewok Adventure DVDs that we have, you and I both have, and Jennifer, that we got for Force Center a while ago before they decided to release them on Disney+. And I just, I wish, because Wilford Brimley has a special place in Star Wars because of his Ewok movies appearance. So, but I hope I'm wrong, because it's like, you know, there's that one alien in Rogue One that's designed after Dennis Muren. You know, this has a little, this guy's a little bit of a Phil Tippett vibe, except for Phil Tippett's got the full big white beard, the ponytail, the bald ponytail. So there's something about that too, but I would love to find out. It's a little more detail, but sadly, I don't think it is anything with Wilford Brimley.
Yeah, I had fun doing a deep dive into my own memories of Wilford Brimley on YouTube, a physical examination. And here's what I think. I think this alien that doesn't have a name yet, according to Wikipedia, I think this fun, gruff alien has some relationship to Wilford Brimley. I think visually, yes. It kind of looks like, hey, what if Wilford Brimley's mustache was actually the bottom of his head? So visually, yes. Voice, yes. There's some of that fun grumble down here. Serious. But then attitude, no. Here's my controversial Wilford Brimley memories and thoughts. And I've known some people who had a chance to interact with him, and I've seen them kind of caution, like, yeah, all the Wilford Brimley jokes are funny, but he was a very kind man. So great. Want to be respectful. The alien seemed a little bit more chill to me than some of Wilford Brimley's performances. I'm not speaking of Wilford Brimley the human, but his performances specifically. It's like, I know I have some memory of Wilford Brimley that causes me like almost fear from my childhood. Mm. And I looked it up, and it's the Quaker Oats commercial. A lot of people know him from that diabetes commercial he made later in his life. But it's like, there was something that I remember Wilford Brimley being mad at me for not eating something.
Yes.
They're really funny because they're you know, they're commercials from a different time. They're a different kind of celebrity spokesperson thing that doesn't happen in the same way. If you want to treat yourself, go to YouTube, put in Wilford Brimley, Quaker Oats. These are commercials where the entire commercial is just Wilford Brimley eating Quaker Oats, and he is preemptively angry at the idea that you have not yet bought oatmeal. You have messed up your life, and he is unhappy with you. Again, not saying it was the human, but it's the cultural picture of Wilford Brimley. The tag of line of those commercials is, "It's the right thing to do."
I forgot about those. Oh, man.
I was frightened of Wilford Brimley my entire life. I was like, angry Quaker Oats man is in Cocoon. I don't know if I want to see Cocoon.
Oh my gosh, this is now just a Wilford Brimley center show. I always say like 87 was my pop culture awakening, where I was aware of pop culture and everything. You know, it was about 10 or 11, and like everything forward is new to me, and everything was past. So Wilford Brimley's in this weird spot where I first became aware of him because of the Ewoks Battle for Endor as Noah, but because of those commercials. And also, he was the star of a TV show from 86 to 88 called Our House, which also had Shannon Doherty as one of like the kids, and he was like the grandpa in the house. So he was kind of nice but grumpy there too. Mm-hmm. And I think combined with that, that is why I've spent my life thinking he was diabetes, which is not fair to him. Like you said, just as a human. But those commercials were real. Yeah, he was upset about you not eating them oats.
It's really funny. Can you imagine? I know that was a little bit of his like stern, no nonsense grandpa. That was his public persona. But can you imagine like Benedict Cumberbatch being like, eat fruit roll-ups. It's the right thing to do, period.
Oh my gosh. I love it.
Anyway, maybe there's some other Wilford Brimley performances where, like this show you're talking about, where he is gruff and lovable, but that's how this alien came across, is gruff and lovable and not too grumpy. So I think there's some Wilford Brimley connection there, but this alien didn't go as hard as Wilford Brimley did for Quaker Oats.
You did not.
My final thought on the matter. Very fun question. And yeah, we've been talking off air. You know, I'm sure there's going to be a Disney Gallery Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, and maybe that's going to be one of the revelations, and we'll circle around and have to really tip our hats to Joshua Bernard for figuring out the connection.
Love that.
So yeah. That's it. Thank you, Joshua. Thank you, Robert. Thank you, James. And thank you, Collecting Star Wars, for all of the great, insightful, thoughtful, and fun questions. Ken, that's it. Where can people find us? Oh, no, I'm wrong. I almost skipped something. Don't worry. We'll tell you where to find us. We are also adding something here to our Questions of the Force episodes. We are adding our segment, Power of the Light Side. Short version is, if you are a patron on Patreon, we've put up a post asking you, inviting you to share just something positive, a character you like, a moment you like, anything in Star Wars that is joyful, because we want to continue fighting for the light side and fighting to just enjoy Star Wars, as well as being critical and thoughtful, also celebrating the light side. So here is this episode's Power of the Light Side from Will Culbertson. Will says, I have a very special place in my heart for this bit of dialogue in Return of the Jedi. Han Solo, well, why don't you use your divine influence and get us out of this? C-3PO, I'm sorry, General Solo, but that just wouldn't be proper. Han Solo, proper? C-3PO, is against my programming to impersonate a deity. Will goes on. One day at the college cafeteria, my friends and I got into a fun discussion about the movie, and one of them brought up how hilarious Harrison Ford's delivery of the word proper was in this scene. Of course, what followed in the weeks and months ahead was the regular injection of the word proper into all of our interactions. It became an instant in-joke, but somehow it didn't die when we all moved on from college. We still regularly reference proper when we see each other on holidays or when sending each other birthday wishes on Facebook and such. It's a small and silly moment in the movie, but it's one that to this day remains a point of connection to me and several of my good friends, and we have Star Wars to thank for it. I love this. Ken, what are your thoughts on this one?
This is so great, and I love that every generation will have this, and like, even though we can acknowledge it right now, but we don't quite know 15 years from now where, you know, people will be in business meetings hitting the right just tone of a word that's said in Force Awakens, or the right the energy behind it. This is so, and yeah, proper is good. I have always loved this moment, and my friends and I kind of do this, that way he kind of scrunches up and he's just, well, why don't you use your divine influence? Like, me and my friend Joel say that to each other a lot. And shout out, I want to shout out, you know, Joseph and you and I both got to watch Star Wars in 30 minutes at Star Wars Celebration. Our pal Mark Riley, Patrick T. Gorman's show, long-running show that got to come back for Star Wars Celebration. Such fun. And Mark Kelly plays Han Solo. And he's always been, and I love my pal Riley, he's a star, Gorman's, they're all, the whole cast kills it, kills it. But Mark Kelly just gets me and gets us. His delivery of Han Solo's lines, aka Harrison Ford's delivery of the lines, is pitch perfect, because it's that. It's basically acknowledging that it's that shared kind of inside joke / experience of, yeah, kid, I've seen everything from this part of the galaxy. Just that, the way just Ford delivers it, it just never leaves your brain from age 7 on. And I just love it. I think, Will, you've captured that spirit here. I love this. This is a great memory.
Yeah, that's such a great, we talk about Star Wars community a lot, and this is such a great example of when just one specific line becomes a thing for friend groups. And sometimes it translates out to, you know, from friends group to, you know, whole larger community thing. But yeah, it's just a great way where Star Wars builds community. I think there's something funny to me about it, too, because, yeah, I mean, you could almost poke fun at Harrison Ford in that great performance of Star Wars in 30 minutes, where there are definitely some moments in Star Wars and in Empire Strikes Back where, like, hey, you want to enunciate there a little, Harrison? And like, no, I don't want to. Like, it's all a kid and runs it together. And then, I don't know, Marquand must have just been in there with the bullhorn and be like, bigger, Harrison, bigger. Because he makes some bigger choices in Return of the Jedi, in my opinion. And one of them is proper. Like, put you... You think there are only two syllables in there? I'll show you. You know, like, he makes a meal out of that word, and it makes it really, really fun.
It's so true. I mean, his mumbling is an ongoing debate I have with some friends on. My version is, he tells Leia, I'm nice men. And my other friend will punch me in the face and stab me if he has a chance. No, I'm a nice man, is what he says. And I'm just like, and there's different, there's like a script version versus what it said. Subtitles say, I'm a nice man. I'm convinced it's more Han Solo to be like, I'm nice man. And it's all because he just couldn't enunciate. Just delivered it in his own way, in his Harrison way. And I absolutely love it, but it's part of the fun. And it's a fun debate. And
it is. Yeah.
You're so right. You're so right. Love
yeah.
It.
And it, yeah, I have happy memories of those kind of things. There was a while there where I had a bunch of good friends that we just, every chance we get, we would play Super Smash. And I had one friend who started saying every time he beat one of us, all too easy.
Yeah.
Would make the rest of us so mad. And then we all started doing it of any time that one of us knocked somebody off the level, all too easy. It's absolutely wonderful when Star Wars comes into your life that way. Any other thoughts or memories for you?
No, I just love it. It's part of the fun. And like I said about the other shows, the sequel era and stuff like that, like it's easy to, there's ones that we have and, you know, more is one of my favorite Kylo Ren ones, all that kind of stuff. But there's just some that we're not thinking of because we weren't 10 when we saw The Force Awakens. And that's how it really grows with you, where you're on the playgrounds or in a chat room or whatever, the kids these days. But, you know, you're going to grow with it in a different way than we will as adults watching it. And it's so fun. It's just so fun to think that that's going on.
Yeah, man, you know, if I was playing Super Smash with those buddies now, and there's a thing in Super Smash where you can, you know, get so much damage that when you finally get whacked, you fly off the screen so violently. It's so over the top when you're at like 400% damage and have survived, and then you just explode off the screen. You know, it'd be fun to be doing that. And then, you know, quote Hux of, you think you got him? thank you very much, Will, for that. Power of the Light Side. Very, very joyful. Now, Ken, where can people find us?
You can find us on the Force Center on Twitter. I stumble on air a lot. Off air, I don't like moving my mouth to talk. I talk too much in microphones all day long, so Grace is always yelling at me, you sound like Han Solo. So here we go. On Twitter, at Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram and YouTube as well. Thank you again to everyone watching our live Q&A. We'll be doing that again soon. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Podcasts available on a lot of different spots, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and more. If you're on one of those places and it allows you to rate and review and you'd like to, please go ahead and do it. It would really help the show. Merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. You can find me at Catnapsock or go to my website, catnapsock.com. And for all you nerds in attendance, because I'm a nerd too, I will be at Star Wars Celebration. That's the other one we were just at San Diego Comic-Con. I will not be at the convention per se, but I will be doing comedy July 21st with Mark Ellis and friends at the American Comedy Company. If you're out there, come on by and let's have some laughs. Joseph, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find me on all the social media, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for more comedy adventures. I got some stuff coming up that I will actually update my website. Amazing. Let's see if I remember how to do that. For now, this is it. Thank you for all of the questions for myself, for Ken, for the word proper. This has been Questions of the Force.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com. Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.